We know hunting for good coffee can be frustrating and time-consuming. And with all the confusing labels out there, it's hard to know that what you are buying is actually mindfully sourced and truly making a difference in people's lives. That's why we put together our Perpetual Joy coffee subscription. Over the last 15 years, Joe Bean Coffee has built friendships with award-winning coffee farmers, ones we trust to consistently bring us amazing coffee year after year. Coffee tastes best at the peak of harvest, which is why we run our program like a CSA, regularly sending you a rotating selection of in-season coffee. You pick how many bags and how often you need it. We do the rest. And you can feel good knowing you're directly supporting small-scale coffee farmers. Go to JoeBeanRoasters.com for details.
The ESL Rochester Fringe Festival, the most anticipated festival in the region, will once again excite audiences with nearly 650 performances, September 9th through the 20th, from comedy, dance, and theater to jaw-dropping spectacles across 39 venues all around Rochester. Don't miss amazing performances in the Spiegel Tent, including the world premiere of Cirque du Fringe Claws Out, Shot Sphere, Kids Fringe, and more. And direct from Italy, Sphere, a mind-blowing outdoor spectacle, free at Parcel 5, September 19th and 20th. RochesterFringe.com.
It's interesting, you know, that you pointed out that Becker did much of his writing during the 60s with the turmoil of the Vietnam War. And you know, I'm the son of a history teacher. I'm very interested in world history. And it's often been said that, like, the Vietnam War was the first war that was televised. And a lot of the opposition grew out of people seeing footage from the war, and it was raw and it was scary. I think a similar thing happened during the Civil War, which was, you know, at least the first American war, where people could see photographs of dead bodies, and that, you know, had not been, you know, something that they were accustomed to. And I think right now we're in a similar period of international turmoil. I recently took Instagram off the homepage of my phone, and, you know, being the dutiful addict that I am, I didn't get rid of it completely because I do need it to promote this podcast. So I do have to give the devil his due. But thanks to Instagram, I've, like, seen more footage of civilians being slaughtered in Ukraine and in Gaza than most soldiers, I would guess, in, you know, international conflicts, you know, that did not involve mass civilian casualties had seen. It's pretty unsettling. And Becker, I think, you know, indicates in his writings that, you know, these types of reminders of death often steer us toward maybe tribalism or you know, prejudice. We want to, you know, kind of circle the wagons around the people who are similar to us to create authorities that we can use to disrupt other cultures, other people's immortality projects. And so I think his ideas are more relevant now than they ever have been since the time he wrote his work. And I would encourage folks to maybe even just read the Wikipedia article on his life or the denial of death. If you don't have the time to read the entire book, listen to some podcasts, you know, about the denial of death, because there are quite a few out there. But it seems like he's onto something in a way that's, like, maybe a little bit difficult to prove in a purely scientific way. But it feels right, and it feels like the time that we're in. What is the antidote to that, at least from your perspective? Because we're all inundated with these, you know, horrific images, whether we want to see them or not. You know, on social media, we can watch, you know, cities be destroyed in real time through live streams. What is the antidote to that? What is something practical that each person can do to kind of resist that call to tribalism?
That's a great question. And if I answer succinctly, I hope that the Nobel Prize shines brightly around my neck next year, you know, that everybody is excited about it. Becker, interestingly, would suggest that that tribalism that you talk about and the circling of the wagons with people who are similar to us, the identification, and you didn't use these words, but this is where kind of I think you were headed, the identification of an other that we are protecting ourselves against or rallying against or fighting, you know, that we would do that even in the absence of the enemy, even in the absence of someone else to fight against, that we would rally together and create another. We would create something to fight against, and that we all need that. We need to feel as though we are dominant. We need to feel as though we are a triumphant over or in opposition to. Isn't it interesting that the three of us who spent decades in opposition to, by way of our music and by way of our ethos and our value system, right? Whether that was opposing, you know, non-tofu food items or evil people, as the case may be, whatever it might be, that we're having this conversation. Becker would suggest, yeah, okay, even in the absence of those things, you would have created something to fight against. We see it all the time. We see it all the time. We have created enemies from friends. We have created new rules that people have to follow or else they are no longer our friends and they are our enemies. We see it geopolitically, certainly, where in, you know, every single day there's new enemies. I mean, we're speaking right now, and by the time people hear this, this situation in Venezuela, whatever that is, is going to have worked itself out, and the oil or the positioning for it will have been resolved, and everything I'm saying right now will be yesterday's literal news. But I think that you are onto something when you say you've removed Instagram from your home screen. And at the risk of sounding like a dude in his 50s who's jaded and ancient, right? I don't want to sound like a dinosaur when I say that I think that the influence of our media need not be social in the amount that we typically embrace it. I think that, you know, I don't want to toot my own horn of the book, but the idea in the book is basically sound. Like, let's come back to center when we've been thrown off track by the world. And I talk in there about the Situationist Internationale and, you know, Guy Debord, who wrote The Society, The Spectacle. You know, the guy's writing in 1968 about the spectacle all around us and the way that we don't live our lives fully, but we live by way of the spectacle, the images that are around us. And that my life is worse, essentially, if I don't fall in love because I see images of people falling in love and I live vicariously through that rather than take the precious seconds of my one and only life and pursue love on my own. He's writing in 1968. Can you imagine what this guy would think about TikTok? I mean, he'd lose his mind, right? Lose his mind. So so the point is that the more we interface with one another and the more, and this is the key word that I hope is the one, if, you know, it's one of these, you know, just if you remember only one thing, authenticity, the more we're authentic with one another about what we're really feeling and what we're really thinking about. I remember when I did one of my first keynotes as a 22-year-old, I'd been performing since I was 13, but when I really started, you know, getting in front of bigger audiences and whatnot, I was performing for a company here in the Seattle area. And right before I walked out on stage, my client off stage whispered to me, she said, "What do you want them to remember after they've forgotten what you said?" And I tell this story on stage today in my keynotes, you know, because I turned to her and I was like, "What are you talking about?" And she's like, "What do you want them to remember? They're going to forget everything you've said. What do you want them to remember?" And I kind of walked out on stage like, "Well, they're going to remember everything. I'm Greg," you know, but not true. They're going to forget everything. No one could even relay all the things we've talked about in the last while here. Point is, after you've forgotten everything that I've talked about, let's remember authenticity and the fact that being authentic with one another about the fact that we are all insecure, frightened, terrified creatures hurtling towards an uncertain end, and we have to figure it out. That's more important than trying to best and conquer and overcome the feelings of insecurity, which are inevitable every time I scroll through social media. It's a challenge that I present myself with. I create this opposition. Oh, I can be that. I can be better than that. I can do that. I can do that. And inevitably I'm going to fail, but that challenge keeps me scrolling. That's nowhere near as important as the challenge of looking somebody else in the eye and saying, "Here's what I'm feeling. Can you tell me what you're feeling?" And have an actual conversation. That's really hard to do. Let's do that. That's way more interesting. Let's do that thing. Because I know for sure, if anyone wants to write me as a result of listening to this and say, Greg, what are you feeling? I'll tell you, I'm an insecure, frightened, terrified creature. And here's the reasons why, you know, and let's talk about it. And how are you feeling? That's way more challenging than the challenge we present ourselves with the social media. And sure, it's fun to see what our friends, I want to see what you're up to. I want to see your sandwich. You know what I mean? Keep scrolling, that kind of thing, you know, but there's a higher calling to the limited time we have. And I think we should pursue it and answer it.
Yeah. I mean, I connect with that. And I think, you know, Greg, you know, limiting your intake and reaction and need to open up those apps is important. And I love the fact that you're just hammering in on the authentic self. And I think that's something Greg and I talk about often, and it shows up in the way you're talking about it. Even tonight, it's, you know, within your book, you mentioned veganism and straight edge. And you know, those ethical principles have carried over like into your life, like continually, you know, and you know, how does that continue to spill over into the work that you do now with the, you know, keynote speaking, and obviously it showed up in your book with your stories that you tell, like how, and you even mentioned it, like that's ground zero, right? Like those are just like the ground zero parts of your journey. And so like, how does it continue to show up as you go through this, walk through this journey that we're on?
Yeah. I think that for me, the true and vulnerable answer is that as I continue growing older by seconds and by days and by months and by years, and begin to realize, oh gosh, okay, old age and death, well, old age hopefully will happen to me, right? Death absolutely will, that I get more and more worried. I get more and more insecure and afraid. Am I doing enough? Am I doing enough things? Am I accomplishing enough things? Are the things I'm doing meaningful? And you start to get in your head too much, right? So continual reminders of like, I'm doing the things that I enjoy. I'm doing the best that I can. And yes, I have messed up and I've done the wrong thing and I've gone down errant pathways personally and emotionally and psychologically and politically and all of it. But I come back to center. And again, you know, that's what the book's about, right? I can come back to center. I can ground myself and connect with other people and reverberate with them in ways which are meaningful to us all, and maybe celebrate each other's differences too along the way. That's, you know, a concept that I think has some merit, right? But I think it's important. And that idea of like that starting point zero is really important too. I had somebody write me last week saying that they just started a new band and that they were straight edge and they were vegan and they were just wondering what approach to lyrics they might take because they really appreciated the trial lyrics. And I was like, wow, compliments are nice. Thank you. Awesome. And the answer is, don't write about being vegan or straight edge. That's just what you are to get your mind clear and your compassion centered. And from there, write about other stuff that's applicable across the board. Like when I was writing the book, I thought, if only business people read this book, I failed. The end. I will be unhappy. I will be disappointed. I will not be interested. If people read this book and say, yeah, I took this to my boss and they liked it. Or I read your book and forget work. I loved the stories in your book. That's what I wanted, because I wanted real human connection from it. And that's what I want from the Between Earth and Sky record. It's what I want from the response to this podcast. You know, it's what I want from everything. Like I want real human connection. That's the thing that I've carried along with me as a value that I think that Becker would certainly appreciate. And, you know, and the people that he was inspired by too, at the end of the day, you know, these were all people who were exploring, you know, what it means to be human. And I think what it means to be human is that we're trapped. Okay. So now what do we do? I mean, we could either punch our way out of the box or, you know, cry it out and talk about it. I think the more vulnerable, authentic path is the way to go. So.
Or cry about it and then punch out of the box.
Yeah. And as long as your punch isn't through someone else to get out of the box.
Right.
Yeah. That's the key. I don't mind if we all punch out of the box together, but you know, let's soothe our sore hands afterwards and make sure that we're not punching somebody else or using somebody as a battering ram to get out of the box.
Right. It's like that collective reasoning that the story you shared at Disney with the rain and all of that, like the that moment of just like, oh, what are we doing here? everyone's looking for someone else for the answer.
And you know what? I'll tell the story in 10 seconds or less to listeners, right? So there's a story in my book, I'll give you the abridged version, where I was at Disneyland, whichever one's the one in Florida, it's escaping me in the moment. And we were waiting for the train to come to take us back to the parking lot. And when I say we, it wasn't just me and two friends, it was like me and then more friends and more friends because it started to rain. And as the rain started to fall and now more of us turned into hundreds of us, the train didn't show up. And somebody said in the midst of all of that, as the rain kept falling and more people kept, you know, jamming onto this platform, somebody said, what are we going to do? Who's going to tell us what we're supposed to do? And there was this moment for me of, oh, like, oh my gosh, that's the human condition right there. Like, what are we going to do? Who's going to tell us what to do? And it started to rewire my brain around power and authority. And where do we find that voice, that guide, that leader, that lesson, that influence that tells us what to do? And sometimes it has to be self-generated. And sometimes it has to be generated amongst collectives or amongst friends or amongst a family, I mean, or an organization or a business for that matter. But like, are we really just going to stand in the rain, hundreds of us waiting for a train, like waiting for Godot that might never arrive as we wait for someone to tell us what to do? We don't have that much time in our lives. Like, let's take more action, you know, let's take more action. So yeah, that was the basis of that story. I'm glad you brought it up.
I think Crass, the band Crass, would advocate that their famous t-shirt, no authority but the self. And I like think about that quite a bit. But in that case, like, you're it, buddy. And that's the problem. And we look for these authority figures, but I think on some level, what we're actually doing is we're projecting our own inner perception of what an authority figure should do onto someone that we like as an authority figure, you know, in the external world. I don't know where I'm going with any of
Dude,
this.
You're the guest. You're the guest that we've been waiting for, the intellectual guest. What you just said was brilliant. You're the guy. It was a joke. You were talking about yourself before. You're the guy. You're the guest. That was amazing. You're right. I think you're right. I never thought about it that way, but you're right. We're projecting an image of the way. I don't even know. I can't word it the way you did. We're projecting an image of the leader that we want, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
I can't word it that way either. I'm an idea factory, not an idea warehouse. I'll have to go back.
Something you brought up that's interesting though, right? Is okay. So here's kind of like the circular aspect of much of what we've been talking about. We bring it back to ourselves, let's say, and we say, okay, no leader other than the self. It's up to me, right? Well, if it's up to me, okay, it's up to me. Let's go. Everybody listen to Greg now. Well, that's a problem because if everybody is to listen to Greg now, then I'm already going to be excluding voices that are not Greg. See what I'm getting at? Right. So the question then becomes, how can we then deconstruct that a bit and come back a little bit back to center and think, okay, what other voices, what does Rory have to say? If there's no leader other than the self and Greg, this Greg is the self, huh? What about Rory? What about the other Greg? You know, and then how can we come back to center again? Which is, you know, again, I'm just using it because we've been talking about it. It's not like a pitch for the book, but reclaim the moment, like this one right here. How can we keep coming back to center again and again and again and again in successive moments, not just one definitive, all right, I'm the man, I'm the leader, let's go. I feel great now, but rather, okay, but now what? How can I relate to other people and be kind? How can I remember that relationships matter? How can I remember to engage other people with laughter? How can I remember to, you know, and then just constantly recentering as we go, lest we get swept up in some other project that we create for ourselves. So.
Hello, Rochester. This is Richard B. Cologne.
And Kwanti Donnell.
We are the curators of the Behind the Glass Gallery, where we host monthly receptions on First Friday, showcasing three underrepresented artists from the Rochester area.
And on this podcast network, you can listen to us speak to these monthly artists to get another lens on their medium and how they contribute amazing things to the Rochester arts community.
Catch us at 240 East Main Street every first Friday and
on the Lunch Adore Podcast Network.
I want to pivot away a little bit from denial of death and reclaim the moment and just ask a couple questions about some of the documentaries that you've been involved with. I mentioned Flight from Death, which I think is over 20 years old now. Sorry to remind you of the mortality.
Don't mind me. I'll be over here decaying.
But you also had some involvement with the Bain documentary. Is that correct?
Yeah, and my involvement with the Bain documentary was somewhat limited in that, you know, while yes, technically, I helped create, produce, whatever it might be, the documentary. I mean, at the end of the day, like, it was Ricky's editing that really won the day. And there was a couple other people involved, Charles and Dan, of course, who directed, Charles's production work on it was endless, did so much work on it. But Ricky's editing was brilliant and really drove the project home. So I want to give credit where credit is almost entirely due. But yeah, there was, you know, some other documentaries, you know, along the way, some other work that I had more of a hand in, let's say, like The Philosopher Kings, which is, you know, a documentary about wisdom seen through the eyes of custodians at prestigious American universities that came out after Flight from Death. And kind of a cool time to be talking about it, because one of the guys that we interviewed for that film retired from Duke University. He was a celebrated hero on the campus of Duke University. He was the custodian at the Duke Chapel at Duke University. He retired 2 days ago, I think. Oscar Danzler, just a wonderful, wonderful guy. And then Je Suis La Jeunesse, who's the custodian, lead custodian at Princeton University. He and I had dinner in New Jersey just last week. We hadn't seen each other in, I think 10 years. And I had dinner with him and his family. It was quite wonderful. So perfect timing to be talking about some of those things.
So how did you eventually get into, working and making, producing, the creative end of documentaries? Was that like a natural outgrowth from creative works and bands? It just seems to dovetail so nicely with your work as an author and then kind of the creative work of being in a band. Would you mind just kind of giving me like a highlights reel of how you went into that and how you got involved in that?
Totally. It was actually by way of Becker. And I know you wanted to pivot away from Becker, but it brings it back a little bit, not the psychological side, but literally. Like I said, I was a sardine in the back of the trial tour van. I read The Denial of Death. I wake up and an hour later, I'm like, what do I do? You know, now that I'm awoken in a different way, right? And I didn't know what to do. So I found out that there was an organization in Seattle called the Ernest Becker Foundation. I wrote them a letter and I was like, hey, I'm influenced by these words in this book. I've been writing lyrics about the ideas in this book. And, you know, there's an album coming out. It was pre Are These Our Lives. I've written lyrics about Becker's work and I finished this book and my mind is, in knots. And I ended up getting connected with the Ernest Becker Foundation and speaking at one of their events and connecting with all these academics who, I introduced to punk rock and the lyrics on the trial record that were Becker influenced. And at the same time as this is all happening, maybe a couple years later, a documentary filmmaker named Patrick Shen from California was working on a movie idea called Man's Search for Immortality. And Patrick was interviewing people. 9/11 was just happening around that time. And one of the principal cameramen for Man's Search for Immortality, I think it was called, died. He was on the first plane to hit the World Trade Center on 9/11, a guy named Tom Pecorelli. And around that time, Patrick contacted the Ernest Becker Foundation. He said, listen, I'm working on this book or this documentary on Becker's ideas, and I'm inspired deeply by this book, Denial of Death. And I'd like to interview somebody about Becker's work. Who do you have who isn't an academic, basically? And the Becker Foundation is like, well, we've got this, punk rock guy who writes lyrics and seems to be interested in this stuff. Maybe him. And Patrick got in touch with me. I was doing something at the time called the World Leaders Project, where I was writing to every leader of every country on the planet, inviting myself to come and visit and speak with them one-on-one to talk about Becker's ideas. And I'd gotten a meeting with the president of Guyana, and I'd gotten a couple other response letters that were positive as well. And the Becker Foundation is basically like, yeah, this punk rock guy who thinks he can write to world leaders, come interview him. So Patrick shows up at my house with, at the time, a producer, a friend of his, to interview me about Becker's work. And we sat down, and within 15 minutes, all we were doing was laughing. It was like I'd known him my entire life. And we laughed so much for so long beyond those 15 minutes that the other producer was like, screw this, I'm out of here. And actually left, and left us just talking and laughing. And we ended up working together to create Flight from Death. Patrick Shen, director of Flight from Death. And we produced it together and wrote it together. And that's how it all started. It started from just a conversation, laughing with somebody who I thought was fun and interesting, who shared some mutual interest in Ernest Becker's work with me.
Wow. I guess that's a good lesson for putting yourself out there and just throwing the Hail Mary and just seeing what comes back to you.
Like what you said in your book, the reverberation effect.
That's it, man. Like, it's like, you know, in the book, and I talk about the, you know, a ripple effect is what we all know, where you throw a stone in a pond and the ripples ripple out to the periphery and then they dissipate. But what happens if we start bouncing ideas off each other and we're all aware of each other's frailties and we're all speaking with authenticity? And then, you know, that reverberation interests me a lot. But earlier, you know, you said, you know, Greg, you don't do a lot of staring at your navel and wasting time. And, you know, and that while that may or may not be entirely true, right? I'm sure I waste time, right? I'm sure I do some navel staring, you know, from time to time. The point is I'm always after that Hail Mary, right? Or at least the complete pass, you know what I mean? Just like, let's get out there. Let's keep more plays, more things, you know, do another band, write another article, connect with somebody else, do another podcast interview. Because I think, if I'm being totally honest, it's probably like this desperate, like the seconds are ticking down in the game, right? And I've been thinking this for 20 years, ever since I wasn't, you know, in my 50s, right? But even in my 30s, even my 20s, I was like, okay, let's get out there, throw the Hail Mary, do stuff, think, see what happens. And you know what? It doesn't have to be a documentary or an album. It can be. I had kids. Right. And I never did personally, but you know, that's a majestic Hail Mary. My God, like, you had kids, like, that's so much bigger than an album. I can't even imagine, you know, like, that's astounding. So like, let's all continue to do things which are challenging and amazing and leave a really powerful legacy that doesn't step on the toes of somebody else who's trying to leave their own as well.
I don't know if that's the end, because you put a really fine point on that sounds like the end to a podcast. I just, you know, if this whole episode has not been, you know, an encouragement for people to pick up Denial of Death, I really think that Denial of Death kind of deserves to be in the hardcore punk required reading bibliography, along with Daniel Quinn's Ishmael. I think also Siddhartha by Hermann Hesse sometimes gets mentioned in there. But Denial of Death, absolutely worth the read for the folks. If you don't have the time to read it, or you're not, you know, a book person, download the audiobook or download some podcasts where people you know, discuss it. And then if you really don't have time for that, another place that Denial of Death showed up for me is this movie called Ghost. It's called Ghost Story. It stars Casey Affleck, and he basically just wears a sheet over himself with two holes cut in it, like Charlie Brown in the Peanuts comics. Basically no dialogue except for one section where somebody gives a 5-minute monologue, which is basically a summary of Denial of Death. More or less a summary of Denial of Death. Now, I don't know for sure that that's what the writer or the director was going for, but it's a long, slow meditation on kind of the nature of death and life. So if nothing else, check out a podcast, check out that movie, and check out that book. And I will turn it back to you, Greg, if you have any final thoughts that we didn't get into, topics you wanted to discuss or share. Because this has been one of the most compelling interviews that I've gotten to participate in, and I want to make sure we get to everything that you had hoped to share on this podcast.
I'm so glad. Well, I'll start with a quick yes and. Everything you just said about Denial of Death, yes and. I'm going to add to read The Birth and Death of Meaning by Ernest Becker, the second edition. Okay, there was a first edition which came out early in his career. He had the opportunity to rewrite and revise it. The Birth and Death of Meaning, read that. Then yes, Denial of Death, but also consider reading Escape from Evil Escape from Evil came out posthumously. And what happened was Becker wrote a book on the intersection of Marx and Freud, and not to go down either of those paths, but the book that was the intersection of Marx and Freud delved into death and all these things at a time when Elizabeth Kubler-Ross was writing about death and other people were, you know, talking about death quite often. Becker's publisher said, this book is too big. We need to cut it in half. And Becker took that book on Marx and Freud, chopped it in half, basically, took a chapter from the second half and added it to the first half. The first half became the denial of death. He won the Pulitzer Prize with that. Can you imagine? Sure. Like, yeah. How brilliant do you have to be like, oh, this thing that I wrote, that's perfect. Yeah, I wrote this thing. It's called These Are Lies, but it was too long. So we chopped it in half. We added a song from the second half to the first half, and we still became the album of the deck. No, never. It couldn't happen. There's no possible way, right? It just never, ever, ever. He takes his life's work, chops it in half, takes a chapter from the second half, throws it in the first half, and wins a Pulitzer Prize. Like, holy crap. The second half of that book, he died before it was realized. And it was compiled together from notes and whatnot that he left behind and a manuscript he left behind. That's Escape from Evil. And it's basically the second half. It's the second half of the book. So I'd recommend reading that too. It goes into some other things as well. But it's pretty astounding to me that the work that he created was so strong that it could be chopped into pieces and still be so substantial. I can't conceive of it in anything that I've done in my own life myself, but thought that was pretty cool. Okay, so all that said, I would love for people to get in touch anytime. These ideas are the most meaningful things in the world to me, and I don't get a chance to talk about them enough. For example, when I get hired to do a keynote, yeah, there's elements of this in there, but there's also fun and whatnot and those sorts of things. Or if I do a podcast about the book, like, people don't want to talk about Becker and these ideas that deeply. Like, you guys are brilliant. So this is fantastic, right? So I would love to talk to people anytime about what they're thinking, what they're feeling, any responses they've had to anything we've said here. And the best way people can get in touch, I mean, there's two ways really at the end of the day. I mean, sure, Instagram at Greg Benick, GREGBENNICK, but just so you don't have to have your, you know, the illuminated rectangle in front of you at all times. I mean, it, the Instagram version, at least, you know, drop me a line through my website, gregbenick.com, or if you're business inclined, LinkedIn, you know, you can find me on there. But I mean, I would love to hear from people electronically or otherwise. Somebody wrote me a letter last week and like sent me a scarf that he had knitted in the mail. And I almost wept. I was like sitting here reading this paper letter. I'm like, oh my gosh, you are archaic soul. This is fantastic. I love this so much. But yeah, please be in touch. Let's have more conversations and have this be, go both ways in a sense with your listeners. I would love to hear what people have to say. And thanks so much for having me, guys. This has been fantastic. Like, I've loved it. And there's tons more we could talk about. But let's have mercy and pity on your listeners and let them go about their day and do other things.
Common Thread is co-hosted by Greg Benoit and Rory Van Grohl, with creative support from Rob Antonucci. Follow us on Instagram at Common Thread HXC Podcast for news and updates. Contact us at commonthreadhxcpodcast@gmail.com. Common Thread is a part of the Lunchador Podcast Network. Visit lunchador.org for more information on other great podcasts.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network.